Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. Hello and welcome to Friday. I'm Holly Fry.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
Today's Casual Friday feels extra casual because we're talking about a game.
Yep, we are.
Have you played much croquet?
So I did not grow up playing any croquet. I don't think I had ever played any croquet until I had not moved to Massachusetts yet, but I had started visiting here and hanging out with people who have been playing croquet their whole lives. And there is just a lot of, especially in good weather, casual croquet playing. A bunch of us go on a vacation every September, where we all rent a house together and hang out, and there is a literal croquet tournament. Sometimes there's some house rules or whatever, but it's like a pretty standard croquet tournament. We have also had weird variations on croquet. Like one year, the vacation was Harry Potter themed, and so we had Wizards croquet as a thing to play. Some of the group are very competitive about this. But for others of us, it is more about standing around and talking with a cocktail in our hand.
Yeah, when I was a kid, one Christmas, we got a croquet set as a gift. And I don't think we ever, like, really got the hang of it or played by the rules. I'm a lot younger than my siblings, so I think I wanted them to play with me, and they're like, "Nah, you're a kid." And so then it was kind of like my brother would smack a ball at me and be like, "That's croquet." And so it was never like a thing for me. And now as I'm older, I don't tend to enjoy competitive things with my friends. It's just not fun. But I was trying to come up with a way we could invent a game called cocktail croquet that maybe involves like getting through a wicket and you get some sort of drink associated with that wicket. I don't know. It's still in its infant stages.
Yeah.
This game I'm making up in my head. If I could add a Star Wars theme to it, I think I'd really be onto it.
Yeah. I have a feeling that the reason that we did not have a croquet set at our house that I know about growing up, it's entirely possible my parents had one stashed in the attic or something, because we had other outdoor games. We were encouraged to play outside. But I think it was my brother and I would have tried to hit each other with mallets and throw balls at each other and generally cause each other harm is what I think would have happened.
Yeah, that's often how games play out when you're a kid.
Yeah.
Especially if there are rules that seem like homework, mm-hmm. you're more likely to default to just injury. You mentioned in the episode that you had come across an article discussing how croquet had spread to other cultures in other parts of the world. And I actually had come across one that I was trying to fit in here for a while, and it quickly became a much different thing. And I was like, this is not the place for it.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, now we have these Friday episodes where I can kind of mention it, which is that there was a particular military action that was going on England's part at the border of India. There is a lot of complex politics there, which is not great. But one of the things that gets mentioned in some of the accounts that were written by the English military members were that they saw Sikhs playing croquet all the time,
mm-hmm.
because they had picked it up and loved it as a game. But as I said, like, to contextualize it and why they were all there together,
yeah.
got very complex and made it about military actions and really crappy behavior on the part of England at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a little off the tone of the much lighter lawn game fun I had in mind.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit about it, about women, like it being a game that women were allowed to play. And that was also a thing that was criticized in the 19th century sometimes. Like, there were people that were like, it is unseemly for these women to be playing this game. They should not be doing that. And that has sort of morphed into, as croquet has been introduced into other parts of the world, it becoming a game that has given women more freedom to play it than they have maybe had in other contexts, which is all really interesting. If you just want to look at all kinds of paintings of women in bustle gowns playing croquet, there are so many croquet
yes.
games, very popular art topic in the 19th century.
Absolutely. It's also interesting to me that in a lot of the accounts that I was looking at, there is almost, particularly in the casual, friendly croquet that a lot of people were playing, there's almost this subtle hinting that it was kind of a game where you could go and flirt.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
Like, so it's one of the few, because it was one of the few sports where men and women would be out there competing or playing on a team together, it offered opportunities to mingle in ways that were not really common,
yes,
and readily available, which is adds a sort of cute dimension to it.
Yeah, folks who visit our website have noticed it does not look the same at all. It has totally moved to a new format, and so it doesn't have artwork on it. But we're still getting artwork for episodes in case that happens in the future. So I went like on a hunt for some pictures of croquet. I found all of these wonderful pictures, like wonderful paintings of women, many of them in bustle gowns playing croquet. But then there were also some that were on a spectrum between suggestive and nude that are like titillating postcards of croquet games being played in various states of undress or in suggestive poses. So it definitely has that aspect also.
Listen, I'm not here to judge. However you want to play is fine.
Whatever.
If you're happy, if you're having fun in your bustle gown or in nothing at all, go you. Croquet. Maybe this actual spring I will make an effort to set up a little mini croquet on my lawn, make my husband and friends play it with me.
Yeah.
I still have to figure out some sort of cocktail or Star Wars theme to make it appealing, though.
That seems fun to me.
To a wider herd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So our second episode this week was on King Philip's War.
Yes.
Which had come up briefly in the episode on Paul Cuffey. It was also something that while I was at the New Bedford Whaling Museum, because I was so interested in Paul Cuffey, I wanted to go see their exhibition on him. There was also a thing that was about King Philip's War, and it jogged my memory of having in the past previously planned to cover King Philip's War on an episode, and then it had slipped off the top of my mind for whatever, as it so often does with so many things that we will be just on the verge of doing and then get distracted by some other topic or realize we don't have the resources or whatever.
Any number of derailments could befall us.
Yeah. Well, and history that is related to Native American history and Indigenous nations can be really complicated to research because so much of what is written was not written from an Indigenous perspective and a lot of times totally misrepresents mm-hmm. the Indigenous side of the story.
King Philip.
And they're... Yeah. Well, so that gets complicated, too, because several people, as I was reading, have made the point that, like, it was very normal for Wampanoag people to have name changes at various points during their life. It seems like the colonists were trying to have it be a mark of respect by offering totally different names than they actually had, but were, like, great leaders from history.
Right.
So, like, but then, Philip was definitely not the name that that he was more often known by. Like, that just becomes this whole big thing of how do you interpret all that. The fact that the whole idea that it was King Philip's war and that it ended when he died is just so, it's everywhere. And it, like, the fighting was still going on for almost 2 more years after that. And so I did not know where that idea had started. Definitely nobody who was living through it at the time was calling it King Philip's War.
Right.
That came about after it was over and people were writing books about their father's reminiscences of it. So, yeah, the fact that Benjamin Church's book is called Entertaining History of King Philip's War. Like, I haven't read that book, but that just sort of, the fact that entertaining was part of the title.
I have the same knee-jerk on.
Yes. So incredibly deadly and destructive.
It seems barbaric.
Yeah, I found it troubling, and to put it mildly.
Yeah. Let's talk about how entertaining it is that all this suffering happened and
yeah.
massacres and horrible yeah. treatment of people. Yeah, it's non-delightful.
Yeah. So essentially somebody's collection of his dad's war stories became how people thought about the framing of this war for centuries afterward. One of the things that was really challenging about this episode was that because it was a war that went on for as long as it did and ranged among multiple colonies— and territory that wasn't held by any particular colony at that point. Like, a lot went on. And so there were all kinds of moments that we did not talk about in terms of, like, a specific timeline of the thing, which is always challenging when there's something as big as an entire war.
Yeah, well, it is tricky because, as you said, most of the narratives we have of it are written from the white colonial perspective,
mm-hmm.
who, it comes up in the episode, are trying to fit Indigenous culture into the models that they know and understand from Europe in terms of how a monarchy worked, in terms of, like, to them, this idea of all of these different tribes was probably very confusing, and they just wanted yeah. to lump them together under an Indigenous man who they chose to call King Philip. Like, there are a lot of pretty obvious check boxes of evidence of, like, they did not understand these people and weren't yeah. really trying to. And as a consequence, there's almost no way that the reality of this situation was captured in the writing that we have from the colonist perspective.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people may imagine that these colonies were kind of isolated from the Indigenous nations that were around them, but really, all of these had become so interconnected over basically a generation. This was happening essentially a generation after the Mayflower arrived. But everything had become so interconnected in terms of all the various Indigenous nations and their existing networks and then the colonies becoming part of those networks, that there are historians who interpret it not as a war between Indigenous people and the colonies, but as a civil war among all of these people who were living in the same place and this, like, very interconnected but still somewhat separate collection of societies. You can, as I said at the end of the episode, there are so many books on this. You could just spend years reading all kinds of different books and interpretations on King Philip's War. It's one of the things that highlights to me how sometimes people imagine history is like a recitation of facts when really, like, there is interpretation and analysis of all those things that are happening, and people have interpreted various aspects of the King Philip's War very differently from one another in the modern era, not just going back to the 1600s and 1700s. So if you're interested, so many books you could go read. So thanks again for joining us on this Friday. If you want to write to us, historypodcast@iheartradio.com. And we'll talk to you again soon. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.